From Variety, I'm Michael Schneider.
Once in every lifetime.
Patty Jenkins has become a celebrated director for films such as Monster and Wonder Woman, as well as her recent TV limited series, I Am the Night. But she's also a huge comedy fan, and her dramatic turn actually surprised some friends at first.
I, for some unknown reason, have been obsessed with comedy since I was a child. Mm-hmm. And, like, the first record I bought was Steve Martin's Wild and Crazy Guy. Mm-hmm. And my mom was just telling a story as I would just flip it over and just listen to it over and over and over again. And there was something about edgy, interesting comedy that always has really delighted me. Yeah. and caught my imagination. So I always was, all through my youth, going out of my way to find kind of underground comedic things. And, you know, I was okay with mainstream sitcoms, but like I said, it was only the great ones that I really was a huge fan of.
Yeah. On this edition of the podcast, we talked to Patty Jenkins about one of her favorite episodes of TV, the 1984 finale to the cult British comedy classic The Young Ones. We also talk about her career, I Am the Night, and even get a Wonder Woman 1984 question in. It's my favorite episode.
My favorite episode.
Episode.
Let's talk TV.
TV.
My favorite episode makes me so. Gentlemen, welcome to Variety's My Favorite Episode. Let's give it up for your host, Michael Schneider.
Thank you, DJ Omar Khan, for the theme song. It's My Favorite Episode, and this time out, we're talking to Emmy-nominated director Patty Jenkins. Jenkins' pick is Summer Holiday, the series finale of The Young Ones, a surrealistic British sitcom that aired in the UK on BBC Two and here in the States on MTV. Ben Elton, Rick Mile, and Lise Mayer wrote the episode, while Paul Jackson and Ed Bye directed. In the episode, misfit flatmates Mike, played by Christopher Ryan, Vivian, played by Adrian Edmondson, Rick, played by Rick Mayle, and Neil, played by Nigel Planner, are bored. So bored that they destroy their flat and are evicted. Then they decide to rob a bank. And, on the lam, they eventually crash off the side of a cliff. I told you this show was surreal.
Got her, bud.
Schools out forever! Yeah, come on, everyone. Let all your hair hang out. Do whatever you want.
What's all the excitement, Rick? Has education finally been cut altogether? That's the only reason I voted Tory.
We're on holiday. I finished my last exam and the summer term is over.
Over? I didn't even know it started.
Oh, yes, Michael, that's right. Your tutor asked me to tell you that if you don't turn up again next year, then he and the dean might have to seriously reconsider your grant.
Oh, well, you can tell my tutor I've still got the photographs of him and the dean. I'll ask for one of those PhDs next year.
Ah, summer holidays. 12 weeks with nothing to do, and the sun's shining already. Hey, doesn't it remind you of when you were little, and you used to sit in the garden in only your underpants? You used to put loads and loads of fruit down them and pretend to be pirates. Yeah, and then when your mummy and daddy went out, you used to take off all your clothes and pretend to be snakes by wiggling about in the sandpit.
Bored, 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 bored.
Patty Jenkins was a super fan of The Young Ones, recording the series on VHS and watching episodes over and over again. As someone who was getting into the hardcore scene here in America, Jenkins could relate to the show's anti-establishment ethos and having fun with the stereotypes of her generation. We sat down recently with Jenkins to discuss her love of alternative comedy, which included other British series as well, such as Absolutely Fabulous, and also her love of the year 1984, which is not only when this episode of The Young Ones aired, but it's also, of course, the setting for her upcoming Wonder Woman sequel.
Yeah.
I'm pleasantly surprised by Young Ones. So tell
Good.
Me, give me the backstory on how you became a Young Ones fan.
So honestly, I'm surprised by it myself in so far as I was like, what is the show that I really watched, wore out, have watched over and over again to the extent that I know an episode off the top of my head that I would say. There's tons of shows. Interestingly, I'm primarily a comedy viewer. Uh-huh. And so ever since I was a kid, I voraciously consumed You know, and that was when I first thought about it. Is it Carol Burnett, Bob Newhart, like all of these shows I watched.
Yeah,
all the classics. All the classics, but even like Get a Life or Seinfeld, all kinds of comedy. Love comedy.
Yeah.
And so I was torn, but the truth is the young ones did have a special place in my heart because I did like great comedy. I didn't like standard sitcoms generally, unless it was like Bob Newhart, who was just so brilliant that there was always this edge to it. But The Young Ones was the first time I saw a show that they're not exactly my generation. They're older than me. But yet it was speaking to me. It was alternative. It was the first really strong example of alternative comedy of my generation that I saw. And so I just couldn't get enough of it because it was all of the different stereotypes that they were playing with were stereotypes in my own generation. I myself was a punk rocker. I was in the hardcore scene here in America. And so, you know, Vivian's character was like, oh my God, near and dear to my heart, but we were all friends with Niels and we were all friends with Ricks and, you know, we were all friends with Mikes. So it was like to see those characters come to life in something that both was mocking sitcoms and incredibly successful as a sitcom, you know, and then that play of like surrealism. And so seeing it, I had always watched Monty Python and I had seen, you know, shows like that, but it was definitely of another generation and more foreign.
Yeah.
Even though this was in the UK, it was far less foreign and super familiar.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it was funny rewatching Summer Holiday. I was like, I remember every scene, almost every line. They still ring in my head, board. Like I still say that to myself in my head. And so, yeah, I loved it. I just loved the show.
And then you take a cricket bat and just like slam up the room.
So violent.
So did you watch it on MTV? Is that how you? Yeah. I remember like it was so weird back in the day because it was nothing but music videos, of course.
Exactly.
And then The Young Ones, like the one weird like outlier sitcom in the middle of music videos on MTV. And it was like so weird for it to be sticking out there.
It made me really appreciate, in retrospect, it has made me really appreciate that MTV aired it because what a great choice and what a bold choice. And I ended up going on to be a huge fan of all of those people. And so then, because, you know, back then we would go to video stores and you'd find like the great obscure video store. Mm-hmm. So then I started watching the comic strip show and all of the, you know, French and Saunders and then Absolutely Fabulous and all. I became a huge fan of all of that movement of comedy and sort of following all of it. But I don't know that I would have known about it. And then it's interesting, in the absence of MTV playing something like that, there are, you know, I'm spending a huge amount of time in the UK right now to finish Wonder Woman 1984. But there's like a whole huge chunk of comedy that I missed because no one was airing it here.
Yeah.
And cable wasn't what it is now and you couldn't find it. And so I'm so grateful for that period of time that I really grew up watching so much of that comedy.
Yeah, yeah. Now, where were you living at the time? Were you in Kansas at this point?
I was in Kansas and Washington, D.C. Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, it's kind of unexpected to get so into this absurdist British comedy.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, it was available to everyone watching MTV in the day. So that kind of informed a little bit of your taste in terms of comedy, or
I don't know. I for some unknown reason have been obsessed with comedy since I was a child. Mm-hmm. And like the first record I bought was Steve Martin's Wild and Crazy Guy. Mm-hmm. And my mom was just telling a story as I would just flip it over and just listen to it over and over and over again. And there was something about edgy, interesting comedy that always has really delighted me and caught my imagination. So I always was, all through my youth, going out of my way to find kind of underground comedic things. And, you know, I was okay with mainstream sitcoms, but like I said, it was only the great ones that I really was a huge fan of.
Yeah, yeah.
And then besides that, I liked sort of bizarre, absurdist stuff.
And this definitely was bizarre and absurdist.
Yes. More so than almost anything. Yeah. I mean, other than Monty Python.
Yeah, yeah. And Monty Python also was aired on MTV for a period of time.
Was it?
So, yeah, yeah.
That's funny.
And The Monkees.
I remember The Monkees. Yeah. I definitely watched The Monkees as well as a result of MTV.
Yeah, yeah. So they liked, Monty Python, Monkees a little more retro, absurdist comedy, and then Young Ones a little more contemporary for the era.
Yep.
But you mentioned you were also into the punk rock scene.
Yeah.
So
I was. And so that was the thing, is like the punk scene had morphed into the hardcore scene in America, but the hardcore scene was such an amazing thing to observe from my point of view, because I got into it about 82, 83. Mm-hmm. And it was just kind of the weirdos. Like, it was the weirdos of any kind. I had lived all over the world, so I probably wasn't exactly the standard kid from Kansas. But it also had every other person of every outside scene at the beginning of the scene, as I witnessed it in America, was like, it wasn't just people with Mohawks. There were people with Mohawks, but it was the long hairs, and it was the hippies, and it was the people of other religions or other countries who just didn't quite fit in, getting together and having this great time. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was the other reason that the Young Ones is kind of like that. The punk scene morphed into being a scene probably everywhere that had a lot of outsiders of all different kinds, and you were kind of all hanging out together. So that was a great thing about that too.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and obviously reflective of the political era in the UK as well. Mentions of Thatcher and the Tories and unemployment and it's a smart show on top of it being absurd and bizarre.
Yeah, and it was funny because I went back. Summer Holiday was the end, the last episode, it turned out, which I hadn't even really thought about. So I went back and I was rewatching the beginning, and it is so funny the different things that they're, you know, like Rick is supposed to be this incredibly radical liberal, you know, character. And it is in that last episode that he's revealing that his parents are super conservative, and he's saying like, but you got to hand it to Thatcher. He's really brought this country together. And it, like, it is these little plays on all sorts of different things. And you know what? It still makes me laugh. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. I just rewatched the episode and laughed through the whole thing. And comedy is so dated so often. And so that's pretty impressive that it's as funny now as it ever was.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think that there's something to be said for that style of British absurdist comedy that sort of has longevity because it is so subtle that maybe you even sort of miss some of it, that it feels still sort of contemporary now?
Maybe. I think so. You know what else I think it is that it's basically relying, not unlike Monty Python, upon incredibly funny people who are creating incredibly funny characters that then collide with each other. So that it's not a formula that is reliant upon, you know, like, it's only funny if you remember that period. These are just super funny people who would be funny in a variety of different characters colliding against each other. And, you know, many sitcoms have done it, but I was even thinking about how interesting it is that the entire show is literally just the tension between those four characters. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't matter what else happens. Even in Summer Holiday, it goes from them sitting in the backyard to then them trying to play cricket in the living room to them now homeless. And then they're on a bus tour, and it's sort of irrelevant.
Yeah.
Like, you could, when they're suddenly homeless, you barely understand why. I guess it's because Alexi Sale, who's playing their landlord, has come in and kicked them out. And yes, that happens in it, but you're like barely following that happens. And then they're homeless suddenly. It doesn't matter. It's like a play that just roams from location to location. Yeah. Continuing to be funny because of the tension between the four people.
Right, right. And even though it's the final episode and the bus explodes at the end, and so conceivably they're all dead, it doesn't really matter. The show could have come back.
Yeah.
Like, they They could have had another season. It wouldn't have mattered. And as a matter of fact, they did, over the years, reunite and recreate their characters on various specials and what have you, as it is. And so kind of nothing matters. The stakes are different. It's kind of just, it's, you know, comedy and story for comedy's sake.
Totally. Yeah.
So you go, you mentioned you've watched Young Ones quite a few times over the years.
I have. I remember this was back in the days of having your VCR hooked up to your TV and taping it. So I definitely, clearly I had these episodes on VHS because when I started watching it again, I was like, oh my God, I remember every line. I wore this thing out at some point. So I think that, I taped them all and watched them all. And it's funny, I can even remember the decoration on the back of the spine of the VHS that it was on, that I had it and comic strip live on it. But anyway, so I watched it a lot.
Was this a show that you watched with others? Was it something, a passion you shared with anyone? Or?
Yeah, I'm sure a little of both. I think it was one of those things where you only had the limited videos that you had, so I would watch it on my own.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that I would show it to friends of mine. And I think also, you know, particularly amongst my group of friends, collecting obscure things and showing them to each other, whether it be, you know, rare, you know, like Desmond Dekker singles that I found, which I have, you know, or I have this, I have like, you know, I had a big record collection. And so obscure records and fanzines and, you know, shows that nobody had seen was a thing, and mm-hmm. particularly was a thing in the hardcore punk scene. And so I think that, you know, collecting that stuff and showing it to each other was a big thing. So yeah. I'm sure I was showing it to everybody.
Back in the pre-online era where it was all about showing people
exactly what you had that other people didn't have.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but everybody saw the Young Ones.
Do you still do you still talk to people about it? Do you find every once in a while you run into a common Young Ones fan and you're able to geek out? Or
No, because I don't even think that I've tried. I definitely come across people who came up watching comedy and into comedy, and you know, we talk about those things, but that's one place right in the middle, because I feel like I've talked many times about, you know, my obsession with Carol Burnett and Steve Martin and these guys who I grew up watching. But the Young Ones being of our generation is not something that I've ever really taken note of until you've asked me what the episode is, and it suddenly makes me really reflect on that was our show. Even though it was British, it was our generation's show.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's great. I'm glad we're finally bringing you out and talking about the Young Ones.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that it kind of opened the door for other comedies, including Absolutely Fabulous.
Yeah.
Which
I could have easily picked an episode of. And the only reason I didn't is because I feel like it's been so much more celebrated. But I loved Absolutely Fabulous, too. What a brilliant show.
Yeah.
Just amazing. And French and Saunders, their show before that was amazing.
Yeah, and Fry and Laurie, I think, didn't they have like, at least Stephen Fry, I think, made an appearance on Young Ones at one point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he did. He did, and a bunch of great bands and a bunch. It was funny, in the episode I was just watching, I even thought I saw, what's his name, who's Alan Partridge?
Steve Coogan, of course.
Yes, of course.
So that's funny. So you've been in the UK recently. What are you watching these days? You still...
You know what? It's funny. I just am halfway through the second season of Fleabag, which I have to say I'm really loving.
Yeah.
And the first season, I when I first started watching it, I wasn't getting it quite as much. But now I'm like, oh, I get it. This is amazing. What else am I watching over there? You know, now it doesn't matter where you are. I've been, you know, I just watched start to finish Chris Lilley's new show. I watched it with my son, and it was amazing.
Yeah, Lunatics.
Lunatics.
Yeah.
Masterpiece. I love it so much. And it actually ends so beautifully like that, which I'd watched all of his other series, and I never had such a satisfying ending. You're just expecting it to be a funny show, but it's super touching, the end of Lunatics.
Yeah.
Yeah, so mostly just whatever I find all over the place.
Yeah, there's too much TV these days.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
But so interesting that you're so into comedy.
I know.
obviously being known more for drama, in the film world.
It's funny because that just sort of happened to me. I wouldn't have been surprised if I had been a comedy director. Mm-hmm. That was, you know, I dated a comedian for years in New York when I was coming up and had grown up watching comedy and have always been a real student of comedy. And Monster was just the opportunity that came because I also watch a lot of true crime and I'm very interested in all kinds of other great movies. But that was the opportunity, was that people were making those, they were making straight to video serial killer movies. And I said, well, you know, this is a story that somebody should tell. And if I was going to tell her story, how would I try to make it the greatest thing that I could aim for? And it turned into, you know, something that didn't go straight to video. It turned into me writing and directing Monster. But it was funny because a lot of my friends who I'd known in the comedy world in the 90s in New York were shocked, sort of like, what? We all thought you were like a comedy person. What happened? And then that was why I went and directed Arrested Development right afterwards, is because I didn't want to only be this serious, dark person. But honestly, I love them both. And I think that very good work in either side requires the other. It was funny. I just met Adam McKay at something who, you know, I'm a huge fan of.
Yeah.
And he was saying, that's so funny. I came up watching only drama and was surprised I ended up being in comedy. I feel very much that way. But yet I employ them both.
Yeah.
both of those sets of appreciation all the time, in no matter what I do.
Yeah. And the line is so blurred now to some degree. I mean, some of the shows that you just mentioned, like Fleabag,
Exactly.
Lunatic, or a lot of these half hours that we're seeing now are so dramatic with comedic elements. Plenty of dramas out there, obviously, that employ comedy as well. So.
Exactly.
There are no genres anymore.
Yeah, which is great. And that is great that I feel like where this chapter is finally when that sort of conversation has become mainstream instead of alternative. You're having to find some small, interesting person. You're getting these, mainstream things on Netflix or on, all over the place, really, that kind of do both and weave the line.
Yeah. Of course, when it comes to I'm the Knight, it does have a little more of a specific genre attached to it.
Yeah, so, definitely.
And, I've always been obsessed with Los Angeles. I've been here 25 years now. So, anything L.A. history, I gravitate to. So, I'd heard some of the stuff of George Hodel over the years.
Oh,
and,
had you?
And Fauna as well.
Cool.
But, to kind of see it play out on screen and the whole sort of mystery behind Fauna Hodel. That's catnip, I think, for a lot of us here in L.A.
Yeah, it was for me, too. As a connoisseur of a great story, as we all are, but as one who dips into true crime for it often, I couldn't believe, and I've said it a few times, and I actually think it's just completely true, this was the best story I had ever heard. I couldn't believe what she was telling when I met Fauna Hodel and she told me the story. I was like, that's the most incredible, actual, true life story I've ever heard. And at the same time, it had these, it was like the told through the eyes of this beautiful person who was a wonderful spirit who sort of made it a bigger story in my eyes, ultimately, because it became about triumph of the spirit rather than just, and then these terrible, seedy things happened.
Yeah.
I felt honored to get to be the one to finally tell it.
Yeah.
Because, what a story.
Yeah, and it's heartbreaking that she's not here to have experienced the whole rollout of the show and all the discussion since then.
Yeah, really too bad.
Yeah. That seems to happen, it feels like relatively often that...
It's happened to me twice.
Yeah.
It's happened to me twice that I was in conversation with people and they died right before I shot. When I made Monster, Eileen warned us we didn't know what would happen, and she got executed a month before we started shooting. And Fauna died 2 months before we started shooting. So it's very odd. It's a very odd experience, very different in different significance both times, but very strange, and puts a lot of responsibility on your shoulders to live up to it. Not that there isn't any way when you're telling any person's true life story, but is kind of extra extra pressure.
Yeah. And also I think the lesson learned is be careful when you're talking to Patty Jenkins about telling your life story.
No. Please no.
Pure coincidence.
Yeah.
Pure coincidence.
Pure coincidence.
But nonetheless, like you were saying, that you feel a responsibility.
Yeah, and I go into it feeling that way. But it's their one, when you know it's their one shot to get their story told, and that you're the person that they left that responsibility with, it's serious business. And it's also been beautifully inspiring in both cases, because it meant that my experience on both of those projects, it's never been about the people working on it. There's never been any ego or anything. We're all marching towards a greater responsibility to try to make something beautiful out of this opportunity, rather than, I've just been able to dodge any, tension between actors or stars or power or any. I haven't experienced that.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah. What do you think that is? That just comes down to your philosophy,
I think it is my philosophy, but I don't know that that's why it happens. I think it's about I think it's about everybody wants to bring beautiful things into the world. Everybody also is capable of doing work where they realize that's not what they're doing, or they're doing it for the money. And all kinds of different things are possible in that scenario. But I really think that almost all artists that I've met want to do something beautiful and significant and important. So if you can find the core of what that is when you're working, it's incredibly helpful to be a unifying thing, because you know, I really think that's universal desire to make a mark in this world that matters and do something good. Doesn't mean you'll succeed, and it doesn't mean it always works that way, but to try and to know that that's what you're trying to do holds everybody very accountable to a different master.
Yeah, yeah.
Than ego, you know.
So how are things right now with Wonder Woman 1984? We're getting close, right?
Getting close, yeah. They're great. I mean, it's like I just finished another cut of the film. So I had done my director's cut, done another cut. I'm feeling super excited about it. It's too bad it'll be a while before it comes out, but that's great too, yeah. Because you know, it really gives us the time to do the score and roll around in things, which, you know, last time we were slamming right into a release date. So it's kind of a great benefit that I'll actually get to finish the film, you know, at a good pace. But yeah, It's super exciting. Yeah.
You know, it's funny, when you picked this episode of The Young Ones, of course, I couldn't help but notice that this episode aired in 1984.
I know. Isn't that funny? So. I know. I hadn't thought of it when I did, but it's perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
It is funny. 1984 was such an incredible quintessential year of the 80s, yeah. Which is why we picked it for the movie. But I thought that was so great, too, that yeah. It was, you know, it was definitely... It definitely was a very memorable, important time in my life.
Yeah, yeah, I imagine. And like you were mentioning, a pivotal pop culture year. I mean, when I think of 84, that's when Madonna came on the scene and Prince had Purple Rain.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, all the movies that came out, Ghostbusters.
You look at the movies that came out, you sort of can't imagine how there was room. Like, how yeah. were there not? Because there are hits. Like, there's a hit. It has to have been every weekend of a quintessential 1980s hit came out. It's
yeah.
crazy.
Yeah. And what, it's such a year.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's funny, like there's so many years, decades where years that start with a four
yeah.
or end with a four rather seem to have like big 94 was when Friends and ER premiered. And
well, that's interesting.
2004 was when Lost came out.
Yeah.
And Desperate Housewives. And I'm thinking purely from a TV side, but I'm sure there's a music and film component to all of that too.
Yeah. That's interesting. So. Yeah. I thought about it a lot when we were talking about the title because, you know, it's obviously evocative of other things too, but for me, 1984 is what it was in my generation, what was the quintessential year and Van Halen album and everything,
yeah.
you know, that you're like 1984, yeah. that was it. That was the 80s.
Yeah. Or Orwell, obviously.
Yeah.
Even like the Apple commercial.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it all roads lead to 1984.
Exactly.
So yeah, of course you would.
yeah. I was like, no, it can't be 1985. And it can't be 83. It's 84. It's
yeah.
got to be 84.
Yeah.
You know,
no, that's
it.
That's funny. That's funny. And of course, now the year that The Young Ones ended.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
So when are you going to do next film? Big comedy.
I would smorgasbord love to do a comedy, like a smart comedy and a fun comedy. But I think about it all the time, and I also have the benefit of working with some really funny actors, and so mm-hmm. we all joke about it all the time. We always have like 10 comedies that we're working on the side. But I don't know. I you know, there's always the potential, you know, future of Wonder Woman, but I kind of hope to do something else first or in the mix there, just like I did this time. And so I don't know. We'll have to see. There's a couple genres I super love, and comedy is one of them that I'm dying to do.
Yeah, yeah. And how about TV? I mean, you know, it's again with the blurring of lines. I know a lot of times, even shooting long form events like
yeah.
I'm the Night, sort of feels more like shooting a film than it does shooting a TV show. But
yep,
it's still
definitely.
Episodic. So, do you feel like there's more room to do that? Do you want to do like a real specific episodic traditional TV show, or do you think long form makes more sense? Especially given
your
schedule.
I really don't care. I really don't know. It depends on what the project is. I think, so I have about four or five things I'm excited about. They're all different. But yet, if like a pilot for a great ongoing series came along that was the right thing to do, I would do that. Limited series is kind of, I'm not dying to jump into it again just because it's as long as of a shooting schedule as Wonder Woman. Yeah. And like that's, these are major projects to take on. I would rather, you know, not do these things that shoot for 90 days, but I would do it if yeah. that's the project that I fell in love with. But in the future, in the long term, I think I plan on doing them all. Yeah. You know, it's, and that's what's so great is that finally, for many years, I couldn't get Fauna's story told because there wasn't the limited series appetite hadn't right. returned right. and it wasn't a highbrow thing yet. And it wasn't quite a movie and it wasn't quite a show. And so the idea that stories like that couldn't be told now can be told in whatever length and on whatever platform suits it is so exciting.
Well, Patty, thank you so much, A, for bringing back Young Ones to my attention. I don't think I had watched it since I was a kid watching MTV in the 80s.
So,
it was time to revisit it and remember those old characters from, you know, God, what is that, 35 years ago?
Jeez. Yeah, oh my God. It's scary.
But fun to see that again. And congrats on I Am the Knight and looking forward to Wonder Woman 1984. So
Thank
a
you.
Lot to look forward to as well. Great
Thank
talking
you.
To you.
So good to talk to you. Awesome.
And that's it for this edition of My Favorite Episode. Join us again next time as we once again explore another guest's pick. And be sure to subscribe to My Favorite Episode on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or anywhere you download podcasts. Also, head on over to Variety.com for your daily fix of TV news, analysis, and reviews. I'm Michael Schneider, and we'll see you again next time.